and welcome to the Interior Health Nursing Grand Rounds, a podcast conversation. I am your host, Allison Thomas, and on this podcast, we talk all things nursing and healthcare. I work as the clinical nurse specialist in the Trauma Services Network in Interior Health. Interior Health would like to recognize and acknowledge the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Dakal Dene, Tanaha, Inglakatma, Shawepam, Statliam, Sioux, and Chicoltean nations, where we live, learn, collaborate, and work together. I'm so thrilled to introduce you today to Jamie Gallagher. And Jamie, maybe I'll just get you to introduce yourself because you'll know better than I do. Tell us who you are and what's your nursing background.
Yeah, great. Thanks so much, Allison, for having me. So I'm Jamie Gallagher. I am an emergency nurse by training. I graduated here in Kamloops 2007 and went to Vancouver General right away. I worked on cardiac, and then I knew I wanted to always be an emergency nurse. So I worked at Vancouver General VGH Emerge for about 10 years, and that's where I kind of got introduced to this concept of clinical event debriefing, which I'll go into a bit more. But I did progress up to be the educator there, as well as I really got my hand in simulation debriefing at VGH, and that kind of inspired this fire inside of me for multiple reasons. And then from VGH, I went into a regional clinical educator role. So I supported 10 rural sites within Vancouver Coastal Health and kind of supported educator development and simulation along the coast. I was actually living in Pearl River at the time. I moved there for a year and a half. And then we came back to Kamloops and I became the emergency nursing educator here, the simulation educator, and now have moved into academia. So I'm up at Thompson Rivers University as a faculty development lead for simulation with the nurse and nurse practitioner program at TRU. So that's me.
Yeah. So we're in excellent hands today. Thanks so much for sharing your expertise with us. Yeah. So I asked you to come on today because we want to talk about clinical event debriefing. That's the right term, right? So how did you initially become interested in clinical event debriefing, if you'd like to share kind of how that started to be a passion point for you?
Yeah, for sure. It was all around the same time in about 2015, 2016 when I was at VGH. And one, I was starting to work with a lot of our emergency residents who were actively doing simulation at the time. And so I was getting introduced to these beautiful concepts of debriefing. And so when I speak about debriefing is just a guided reflective learning conversation between team members. And so we were doing a lot of simulation debriefing. And at the same time, we had a couple of like pretty profound cases that stuck out to me. One was this traumatic arrest case that we had both the trauma surgeon and the emergency physician kind of disagreeing on the care of this treatment of this patient. And afterwards, we kind of had what we called just like a little huddle. And the trauma surgeon kind of led this like really beautiful debrief around, you know, best practices that are emerging and why we did things one way versus the other. And we all kind of had this opportunity to like learn together and ask questions and grow from that experience. We started doing a lot more of these debriefings after her traumas. And I just remember being transformed, being like, this is so incredible. Like, here I am as this active, you know, educator in the department. And still there's so much to learn. And there's sometimes these questions where I was noticing that after certain events, the nurses would go to one side of their nursing station and kind of like micro debrief each other. And then the surgeons or the physicians would all kind of be doing this, their own kind of debriefing. But when we all came together and discussed the case, it gave us an opportunity to ask questions in a safe setting, to learn about, you know, what was best practice and some challenging cases. And then we also had this great opportunity to kind of give each other a high five and like celebrate a job well done. And I remember again having this, you know, what I would call a quote unquote scary trauma surgeon, you know, ex-military, and he was so kind of terrifying to work with. But at the same time, we ran this really, you know, traumatic airway case. And I remember afterwards, he just kind of said, you guys, this was a tough case, one of the toughest cases you can get in emergency medicine, but really, really great job and job well done. And I just remember being like, I needed to hear that in that moment. Mm-hmm. And had we not had this debrief, we wouldn't have received that feedback in the moment. You know, I would have kind of gone away and driven home and had a glass of wine and be like, did I do a good job? Did I not? And this just kind of gave us that opportunity. And I was just hooked. And from that moment on, we kind of started trying to implement these post-clinical debriefs in multiple areas. And then when I moved rural, we implemented a framework around debriefing after events and kind of created a checklist. And one of our internal medicine specialists, Dr. Sasha Allman, started debriefing after all of his resuscitations and his cases. And it was incredible the things that came out of it. Not only did, you know, our nurses be able to ask questions and improve on our teamwork and our communication, but we actually identified lots of things that we were missing. Like, we were missing some pediatric airway equipment. We were missing up-to-date protocols. Like, we had old ACLS protocols on the wall, and all this sort of stuff came and emerged from these, you know, real life debriefs that we were having, not simulation debriefs, although those also identified what we call latent safety threats, but the actual clinical debriefs where we were kind of saying, like, you know, we had some nurses being like, I'm not understand why you gave this medication over this medication in this patient. And they were able to ask these questions in this setting, and they just stuck to it. And it was a game changer. And that just to me was so practice changing. So I fought to try and get these clinical event debriefings on our Code Blue policies and procedures in Vancouver Coastal Health. And this is again back in 2007. So here we are 7 years later, and I'm still just like, rah, rah, rah. Like, let's do this. So that's kind of where it stemmed from. Yeah.
Yeah. What I really appreciate about you, Jamie, in the little bit of time I've been able to get to know you, is not only this obvious respect that you have for patients and best patient care and patient outcomes, but also this real commitment to staff and your colleagues, and especially nurses, as that, you know, that's the group of people that you really serve in the roles that you've been in, and such a commitment to care of nurses. And I really appreciate that. And you can really hear that very genuinely from you when you speak of your colleagues. So thanks for that.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for saying that. Yeah.
Can you tell me, okay, so I've heard you use the phrase hot debrief before. What is a hot debrief and what is not a hot debrief?
Yeah, you bet. So we kind of use the term hot debriefing. It means the same as a clinical event debrief, but hot debriefing means hot, which means immediately after. So this is, you know, within the minutes to hours after a clinical event. So I'll just use the example of a cardiac arrest. So it would be happening immediately after, whereas a cold debriefing is something that would take place days or even a week later. And cold debriefings are usually associated with highly emotional or traumatic events, and those are usually more critical instant stress debriefing. So that is usually planned and, you know, supplied through the manager of the unit. And these are after maybe, yeah, particularly traumatic or emotional events. So either, you know, it was a staff member that you had to resuscitate on the floor, or somebody's family, or just some, and it could be anything, any sort of case that kind of hits emotionally. That's not what we are intending to educate on with hot debriefing. That is more a cold debriefing. And so it's just kind of slang terminology. But yeah, hot debriefing means immediately after the clinical event. So if you can gather everybody that's there at the moment, so whether it be orders, unit clerks, labs, physicians, nurses, paramedics, transport teams, residents, med students, RTs, whatever, whoever was involved in the case, to try and get them before they all resort back to their clinical areas, scatter, which is one of the challenges. Yeah. But yeah, so it's hot. So immediately after. Thanks for the clarification.
That's really great. And so what are the benefits of hot debriefing? I'm sure there are many. So maybe you could just start there. What are the benefits? Why do we care about doing this?
Yeah, so along with my lived experience as to the profound benefits of it, there is a ton of literature that is supporting this. A lot of the literature does come out of the emergency department, but again, this can be any unit, the OR, you know, community, wherever it may be, but a lot of the literature does support hot debriefing. And so the American Heart Association and the UK Resuscitation Council globally have endorsed and encouraged debriefings to happen after cardiac events. And this goes back to, I think, 2015, that the American Heart Association and Heart and Stroke Foundation have been promoting debriefing within all of their cardiac arrest protocols. But the positives and the benefits are multifactorial. It's for the benefit of our teams and teamwork and communication, for process and systems improvements, as well as, you know, equipment malfunctions and addressing any issues that come up in the moment. So there was a paper out of Ireland back in 2020 titled Promoting Hot Debriefing in the Emergency Department, and they said that they have made, you know, substantial practice changes to their resuscitation room equipment, to communication, non-technical skills, and the departmental activities. So it really helps to drive, like, where are our knowledge gaps and maybe where do we need to continue to practice moving forward so that this can help benefit patients in the future. If this exact same case were to come in next week, are we going to be ready? So 100% of the participants in this study, they did felt that the process helped improve their clinical practice, and 90% felt that they benefited psychologically from the process. So it can be anything from improving documentation or looking at outdated protocols, encouraging the use of a whiteboard, or just identifying more needs for education. And again, just sometimes it's an opportunity for us to kind of stand there and celebrate each other and the work that we did despite the outcome. I think in healthcare, especially in its current state, sometimes we just need to hear that. And it really helps with, you know, the moral distress of being involved in these types of resuscitation. So there is a lot of evidence to support that these benefit teams substantially. And some of that literature is produced out of Alberta with Rocky View and some local Calgary hospitals. And it's global. A lot of the publishings are coming from Australia, the UK, the States, you name it. So it's out there, and there it's actually been shown that there was zero incidences of staff harm related to holding these debriefings in some of the literature that they've actually studied and looked at if there was potential harms. But I can talk a little bit more about that later.
Yeah.
There is potential risks here, so we can get into that in a little bit.
So given what you just told us about how phenomenal hot debriefing can be, what are some of the barriers, do you think, that are out there about it? Because I imagine not everywhere is doing it. So
yeah,
we have
this
body of literature and experience that says that this is a wonderful practice. And then there's, I think, a gap. So what do you see as the barriers?
Yeah, for sure. So identified barriers are definitely lack of time and space. So time, again, you kind of maybe run a code up on, you know, a medical unit, and either the patient survives and gets whisked off to ICU, and there you've lost half your team, or the patient unfortunately doesn't make it, and then everybody just kind of dissipates and has to get back to their, you know, their home unit or whatever they were doing beforehand with, you know, multiple patient loads. So time is definitely a factor, and how that can be addressed is implementing it a bit more into a culture shift, which again takes time for that to happen. But I think if people have the expectation that a debrief is going to be held, they're more likely to kind of wait around and either initiate it or wait for somebody to actually hold the debrief. So kind of just having that culture shift is really what I'm hoping to create through a lot of this education. So time is definitely a factor. Somewhere where you can actually have it. So again, sometimes if we are kind of talking about things that maybe we need to improve on, we don't want to be doing it in front of a ton of other patients. Sometimes you don't really have a location, and actually leaving the unit to like a meeting room is just totally unfeasible. So location can definitely be a factor. And then the other aspect is trained facilitators. So I know a lot of people want to do this, and when they do them, like our hospital at Royal Inland, we have one of our ICU educators, she's doing these quite frequently, and people just love it. They're just like so thrilled with her holding these debriefs whenever she's involved in these resuscitations. But not having it is an issue, because people know that they really want to debrief, but they don't know how to. And there is some nuances to how to hold these debriefings and making them psychologically safe and making them effective and, you know, utilizing the proper tools. So facilitator education. So that's something we're really trying to address with trying to hold workshops in various units and sites across Interior Health, which I can talk more about at the end about how to access the education. But a lot of times it's the barrier of how to do them. But a lot of times if you've witnessed a few debriefings and you have the tool in front of you, the guide, the hot debriefing guide, it can be done, and we just need people to step up and kind of take that opportunity. And, you know, we learn as we grow, and it's never perfect, but I think it's important for us to keep trying, because we do know that there are substantial benefits and people do really, really enjoy participating. And a lot of the physicians are really, really gung-ho about it too, from my experience. And yeah, I guess the last barrier could be the fear that if it was heated or if things went wrong, nobody really wants to disclose that in a group setting. So there is that fear that there could be potential harm or finger pointing, which is kind of why at the beginning of these conversations, we really lay some ground rules about what this is and what this isn't. And it's not for personal assessment or kind of, you know, laying the blame game or anything like that. So we just need to be really clear about that at the beginning. And usually once we do that, we kind of mitigate a lot of the risk that could be involved with these. So those are kind of the main barriers.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about, as we've been discussing, we've been talking about things like a cardiac arrest type of mm-hmm. event, but it kind of occurs to me that there are probably opportunities that are missed because they are places where a hot debrief would be really beneficial, but people mm-hmm. maybe don't recognize them or don't mm-hmm. feel like it was bad enough mm-hmm. that they're allowed to ask for a debrief. Do you see mm-hmm. that? Is that a real thing? Or
yeah, for sure. And actually, I've been having this conversation with some colleagues, and there was a paper that came out during COVID from Texas Children's Hospital about running like a post-shift clinical debrief. And we know that some of our shifts right now that nurses are working in healthcare are traumatic only due to the fact that they are so short-staffed. They're working 12 hours without a break. You know, there's maybe junior staff on the unit and not a lot of seniority. And that in itself might be something that needs to be debriefed. Or there was lack of access to resources, or you have an unexpected downtime and nobody knows the downtime procedures. Like, there are so many things that could be discussed. And so there is this potential to hold an end of shift debrief, which I think is a really unique and could be a really beneficial idea about how to do this. So perhaps the charge nurse, you know, at 30 minutes before the end of the shift, just calling all the staff together and saying, hey, everybody, acknowledging and validating that was a really rough shift. We were super short and we had high acuity and these sorts of things. Can we please talk about like what went well? What are some of our wins from tonight? What went really well? And giving that opportunity to, you know, Nurse Sally to say, you know, I really connected with Mrs. Jones and her family and I had a really nice conversation and got to do some great teaching. Like, great. Like, let's celebrate that. And then say, what were some of the main challenges? And is there anything that needs to be escalated to our educators or managers? And if so, let's brainstorm together and get it written down and hand this in to the manager when they come in the next hour. Those sorts of things I think could be really, really, really powerful, like really impactful for staff to have the ability to felt seen, heard, and know that their experience was validated and that maybe some things are going to happen because of it. When you don't take the opportunity, it's just like feedback. If you wait a while, it's not as beneficial to give that feedback. So doing it in the moment and really honing in on the frontline staff ability to give really succinct and maybe really important feedback about something that's not working, even if it's an equipment issue or malfunction or education, to kind of capitalize that in the moment is so much more beneficial. Because when you wait 2 months and hold a staff meeting and say, what are some of the main issues? It's all kind of blurry. But if you're able to jot it down in the moment, I think it can really make impactful changes to the unit. So there's that opportunity. But again, it doesn't have to be, like you're saying, Allison, like a cardiac arrest. It really could be anything that people are kind of feeling like, hey, should we come together and have a quick touch base? And again, it's just a guided kind of reflective learning conversation, but it could be anything. It could just be a normal everyday procedure, but maybe you have a ton of new learners on the unit and that should be debriefed. You know, maybe they're all doing a back dressing change for the first time and there's multiple people involved, like step away and celebrate, summarize what we just did. What are some things that we did well? What are some things we need to work on for next time? And let's learn from that. And here's how we move forward. And it can be as simple as that. So I think there's tons of opportunity there.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. I really, mm-hmm. I haven't thought about end of shift debrief. I've never heard about that. And mm-hmm. I know for myself, I think I would enjoy that mm-hmm. At the bedside. So thanks for that. That was very mm-hmm. interesting.
No worries.
So you kind of alluded to some risks around debriefing. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about that a little bit more? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I haven't personally, in my experience, had any risks or any negative outcomes from these clinical event debriefings. If anything, for me, it's just been incredibly positive. But debriefing and teams, there's always the potential for risks. So people may feel embarrassed with their performance, or they may be frustrated with how things went. It took too long to get equipment. It took too long for people to get there. People didn't know the process, whatever it may be. So there may be people entering into these debriefs feeling a little hostile. And that is definitely a risk. So I have heard of one scenario where a nurse at a large teaching hospital decided to facilitate one of these debriefs with a very large interdisciplinary team, and it did get ugly, and there was some tears and finger pointing and that sort of thing, and she didn't know how to manage it and how to steer away from that. And so it was a really negative experience. And I've only ever heard of these happening very few and far between. And so I am really passionate about educating people on what to do if that were to happen. So again, there are always those risks. But again, some of the foundations of opening up these debriefs is just really laying down the ground rules that this is not for personal performance. This is, we're here to talk as a team, how we can improve. It's never mandatory. So you never drag people in that don't want to come, because if they can feel that they are heated and angry, they should probably not be coming to these debriefs. Maybe they just need to have a one-to-one follow-up conversation afterwards, or they're feeling really embarrassed about their performance or their lack of knowledge. And so if they're feeling very vulnerable, it could be very traumatic for them to attend a debrief where they kind of feel like all eyes are on them. So again, really looking at it from a systems and process and team improvement aspect is highly important. And then again, for the facilitator to have a bit of training, which we do in the workshop, is to really practice this. But if things start to become unsafe, really actually saying, hey guys, can we just take a pause? I'm just concerned that this debrief is getting a little bit unsafe for some participants. So I'd really like to steer us back to what you had said earlier about pharmacy tubing up medications. Can we go back to there? And just really redirecting it and kind of taking control of the debrief. But you need somebody with the training to do that, or the knowledge that these type of things can happen. They don't often, but they can happen. And there are some reasons why. So there's this article out of Australia in 2020 that he led 71 debriefs with a total of 506 participants. And there was no recorded incidents of participants' harm that were noted throughout his study. So it's not very common, but there is always that potential. And if it does start to get there, how do we kind of mitigate that and stop it? And sometimes you might just need to say, okay, this is becoming a bit heated. I think we're going to call the debrief there, and we can all follow up and have some private conversations one-on-one. And it's like feedback. I would praise in public, but give feedback in private. Nobody wants to feel humiliated in these type of things, because that will definitely not be bringing them to the table and not help improve the team. If anything, it will divide it further. But these are very, very, very rare, but there's always a risk. So just to be mindful and listen to your gut. If you're thinking this is pretty emotionally charged, now is not the opportunity for a debrief. Listen to that and don't ever force it.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what the facilitator training looks like? You've told mm-hmm. us about how you discuss laying ground rules and mm-hmm. a little bit about perhaps navigating tricky situations, but could mm-hmm. you maybe give us an overview of what that looks like if anyone's interested in pursuing
for
that?
Yeah, for sure. So throughout Interior Health, there's not a ton of these workshops happening at the moment. I am running a few of them just myself personally at Royal Inland Hospital. However, I did just have a conversation with an emergency physician from Calgary who's moving to Penticton in July. And he actually founded the website Info Debriefing. And Info Debriefing is exactly that. It's clinical event debriefing for healthcare teams, and it stands for immediate, not for personal assessment, fast facilitated feedback, and opportunities for the team to ask questions and clarify events. So it's info, I-N-F-O, debriefing.com. And it's on there. So once he moves here, him and I are going to partner up and try and start offering a ton of workshops. I've done his workshop before a few years ago. We did it virtually when him and his nurse colleagues were in Calgary and we were in Kamloops. So we have done it virtually, and he is hoping to offer more of those in the future. So just contact him for courses. And then we are hoping to start to move forward with really rolling this out through Interior Health in the next year. But if you do want access to just the hot debriefing guide that I'm referring to, you can go to bcsimulation.ca. That's where we develop the hot debriefing guide that we use in Interior Health that you might see on some of the crash parts and in some of the trauma rooms. You might recognize it from some sim centers. I know that Kelowna is using it in some of their simulation training. And so that's the BC hot debriefing guide that we developed and revised it back in 2022. And it actually has on the back of it the list of all the health authority numbers for the EFAP resources in case you do discover through the debriefing that some people might need a bit more emotional support. You can kind of refer them directly to the EFAP number on the back of the guide. So again, that's through bcsimulation.ca.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great news to hear mm-hmm. that this will be rolling out more broadly across the region. I think it's really needed, and that's very exciting mm-hmm. news.
Yeah,
that's
it is.
Great.
Yeah, I think.
How do I go about, so if I'm working and I feel like I want to do a hot debrief on my unit, how do mm-hmm. I request that, or if I do the training, do I need permission to initiate that, or how does that work?
Yeah, you don't need any permission. Anybody can kind of do it. We are really looking for unit champions and, you know, those early adopters to kind of get this going. This isn't something that you would source out an external resource for, like you would critical incident stress debriefing, where we bring in trained psychologists and psychiatrists to kind of hold a cold formal debriefing with, you know, a week after these events. But you can just kind of pick up the hot debriefing guide, honestly. And if you want to give it a go, just give it a go with your colleagues. We do recommend doing some of the workshops that we're going to start hopefully rolling out. And again, I can be requested to do them virtually with your site. If you'd like that, we can definitely do it virtually. The reason I do like the workshops is that we run through a bunch of scenarios and we just kind of get practice using the tool and having these, again, promoting these reflective learning conversations amongst teams so that we help build your confidence before you do go out and start initiating these. But a lot of the research that has come out of clinical event debriefing has actually indicated that nurses, particularly either charge nurses or educators, or just nurses in general, to lead the interdisciplinary debriefs is actually highly beneficial. And if physicians run them, sometimes there's still that innate hierarchy that exists and people are afraid to speak up or ask questions or look stupid. And so if nurses kind of lead it with an interdisciplinary team, it has been shown to provide a huge benefit. So they've had incredible success with this in Alberta around Calgary, particularly, and they have done thousands and thousands of debriefs and have done a lot of research. And so it is a charge nurse-led debriefing that they do. But anybody who has the tool that wants to try it, you kind of can just pick it up or request that you have these on your units. I think I picked up a shift in Merritt a few years ago and immediately printed off the hot debriefing guide and posted it on their nursing education board because I was like, just in case you want to do this, it's here, just because I'm such a huge proponent of it. And I think it's so important for teams to kind of come together and reflect on things that went well and things that can be improved on. But that being said, you don't have to have permission. Anybody can kind of initiate it if you have the confidence to do so. And I would encourage you to do it. Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you about places that we can go for more learning or more resources. Mm-hmm. So you've told us where to find hot debriefing. Can you say, do you have, you know, a favorite website, or is there a national group, or, mm-hmm. you know, a book? Can you suggest some places to look if someone's interested?
Yeah, for sure. So Info Debriefing website is a really great one. They can share some resources. There's an excellent 9-minute YouTube video. There's a really nicely done depiction of a hot debrief that takes place after an event with the team members that they could get at the time. I can put it in the notes of this podcast. And then another opportunity is through Debriefing Academy. So I also teach for the Debriefing Academy, which is a world-renowned simulation debriefing organization, but they also have a course on clinical event debriefing. It is a little bit more expensive, but it is with literally the world leaders in clinical event debriefing, who are their faculty that teach this course. So again, that's through the Debriefing Academy, where you can look at multiple resources, both for if you're interested in simulation debriefing and or clinical event debriefing. They have multiple courses available, and they're usually about 2 hours once a week, and it's usually like a 7-week session that you get a certification at the end. And just with the best of the best, it's a really great organization for clinical event debriefing if you're interested in that sort of education outside of interior health.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. That's mm-hmm. great. Sounds like a great resource for people to have a look at. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm.
No worries.
And now we're unfortunately, I think, coming close to the end of our time together, Jamie.
Yeah.
We used to get to visit a lot more than we do get to now. I'm just wondering, is there anything that is important to talk about that we haven't been able to talk about yet about clinical event debriefing?
I don't think so. I think we kind of covered a lot of the things that it's not mandatory. We really want to maintain psychological safety. It's for everyone and anyone. I know I have held some debriefings and I have made mistakes in the past with maybe overlooking people that were involved. And again, just really involving anybody that has some great ideas. We've made some substantial changes to some of our systems and improvements. I know that we held a debrief at BGH Emerge around a missed STEMI case because the ECG was taking too long because we didn't have a physical space. And one of the nurses just suggested, why don't we move the linen cart over there and put a stretcher that's specifically reserved for ECGs? And that way we can cut our ECG time down, which is the gold standard, is in less than 10 minutes of presenting to the Emerge. And, you know, we were sitting at 30 minutes on average. And as soon as we made that change, we decreased our ECG time so substantially, we actually got nominated for like a BC Quality Award, Quality Improvement Award. Like, it was just the most impactful suggestion from a frontline staff by doing a debrief and making a simple change such as moving a linen cart and putting a stretcher in a certain area that probably saved hundreds of lives because we were able to access timely ECGs for patients with chest pain in our emergency department. So I just, yeah, cannot explain the benefit of it enough. But I do think it's really important to include everyone so that people don't feel overlooked. One of the main goals of clinical event debriefing or hot debriefing is to really provide our ability to learn together from each other with your entire team. You know, we work in teams in healthcare, and this is really important that we don't just silo ourselves to, you know, nursing debriefing nursing, and physicians do their own micro debriefing, or, you know, you're driving home and you debrief, you know, at the bar later on that night or whatever it may be. It's really important to kind of do it with your team and learn and grow together. And I really think it helps to create cohesion and inclusiveness and resiliency and just camaraderie between our team members. And I think we really need that right now. So yeah, I just think it's super important. So just don't make my mistake and look over people thinking, oh, they weren't really involved. But maybe if they did pop their head in and, you know, they were involved in some factor, welcoming them into it is really important for us to kind of grow that mutual respect between each other. Again, if you have learners or nursing students, RT students, whatever it may be, I've heard from them firsthand how impactful it was for them to be invited into these debriefs and just kind of hear the respectful dialogue of people being able to ask questions and knowing that we, as frontline nurses, we don't ever know everything. And it's important for us all to learn and grow together and kind of ask those hard questions like, what could we have done better? And where were some of our gaps in this? And how can we make these improvements? And I think that's just so important. So yeah, I think we kind of covered the basics of it, but thank you very much for this conversation. I'm so excited.
Thanks for sharing your time with us.
So great
to have you, Jamie. Yeah, I just want to say thank you for your expertise. Yeah. And even though you have not moved away, but your main job is not in interior health, that you are still taking care of us.
Thanks.
And doing this work with us. So really appreciate that. So I just want to say thank you to Interior Health's Professional Practice Office for supporting this project. If there's any questions, concerns, or suggestions for future episodes, you can get hold of us at professionalpractice@interiorhealth.ca. And as always, want to say thank you to the most wonderful Dwayne Walwin, who is our sound editor and is the real genius behind this project. So thank you, Dwayne. And thank you, Jamie. Hope to see you again soon.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks so much, Allison. Okay. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. We know you're busy and your time is valuable. Thank you for spending some of it with us. Thank you for your commitment to your profession and to your patients and being a part of the journey of building a culture of excellence around nursing in our health region.